News Talk 99.7 WNTK, AM 1490, FM 98.9, WEUVR. Welcome to our program with George Newart of George Newart Construction and Trusted Reynolds Automotive in Newport. Been talking the last few weeks about the trades, and I think George wants to talk a little bit about the unlicensed trades that exist today, which are plenty.
I do. Yes. It's kind of something that falls in the peripheral of our economy, and that is there's lots of trades out there that are non-licensed. So I was 5 days in Florida. I went and visited my good friend Stu McKenney, Stu and Peggy McKenney down there. They were lifelong Newport residents. And Peggy
I know the name, yeah.
Yeah, she was a school teacher at Toll School for, I don't know, 15, I'm not going to have the years right, but 12 or 15 years. I think she was the principal for another 12 or 15 years. Wow. And then Stu McKenney had McKenney Construction in Newport for 40 years doing excavation work.
Yep.
So it was nice to go down there. Ormond Beach is where they live. It was really nice to go down there and see them and have some warm weather. And
yeah,
it was really nice to go down there. And Stu has a pontoon boat. And we went out on the Tomoka River. We did a little fishing and toured around. It was kind of cool. So
yeah,
the warm weather is kind of nice because here it is. It's April down there and everything is green and the lawns are green and people are mowing lawns 24/7 and it's just like,
what's the temperature like down there this time of year?
80.
Yeah,
it's chilly in the morning, 55 or 60, 55 maybe in the morning. It got a little chilly.
Is it super humid at this point? Or?
No, it wasn't. No. I don't know. No, it wasn't.
No.
So
that's what I do like about Florida is, and it gets super humid, but then in the afternoon you have the daily thunderstorm that rolls through and just knocks everything back.
Yeah, and then there seems to be a constant breeze, so it kind of just makes everything very, very comfortable.
It is different,
It is way different. And so the only thing I could do is, like, I'm down there, and I had a beautiful suite. They have half of their house is a suite, so Stu built this secret bookcase. So if you go in the dining room, you go in this dining room, and then he was showing me where my quarters were, and then I'm like, have you lost your mind? He's walking towards this bookcase, and I'm like, he has lost it. So then he grabs the bookcase, and he swings the bookcase open, and you honestly could not tell there was a room behind it.
Are you sure your friend's not like a vampire from like 300 years ago?
It's a safe room. Okay. It's a panic. I called it their panic room.
Yeah.
But then you open this bookcase, literally, it's like raised panel, bottom, doors. I think there's doors. I can't remember exactly. But then there's bookshelves on top. And then he's got all the knickknacks that are on the shelves, silicone down. So they put little dabs of silicone on them so that when they open and close the door, things don't wipe out all over the place.
It makes
it's
sense.
Actually really cool.
Yeah.
So hats off to Stu and Peggy for having Kenny and I. Yeah. My buddy Kenny Coons and I went down there for 5 days, and we just had a really nice time. So it's just kind of nice seeing how other people live. It's right outside of Daytona Beach, and it's just kind of so wild to look at an area like that, which is basically all supported by Bike Week. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how many venues and how many bars and how many places seem to be to exist just for Bike Week. It was pretty fascinating.
That's like Ware's Beach up here.
Exactly.
Same kind of thing.
Yeah. So it was cool. Just to, you know, one of the things I reflected on is the fact that when you have a construction company, you're outside all the time. I honestly just want to dig dirt. I love running an excavator, driving a dump truck, all that stuff. And we literally lose 30% of our life up here. Our life.
Yeah.
I mean, between November, which stinks, other than Thanksgiving, of course.
Right.
I actually don't mind it, but it's that in-between blah, gray, leaves are all off the trees, and you're like, come on, get me some snow so I can either go snowmobiling or skiing or something. Like, it's that in-between crappy month, and then you've got holidays, of course, to carry you over because you're all distracted shopping, but the weather out there is horrible. And then in the springtime, March and April, pretty much stink.
Yeah, that's, I mean, really, like, for me, it's like, I don't really mind winter up until, like, New Year's Day, because, you know, at that point...
That's why I like it, too.
Yeah. I mean, you have something to look forward to mentally, at least. And then, yeah, January, February, March, like, half of April is just waiting.
January 2nd, I'm ready to go somewhere. But I like to snowmobile, so I go north to Pittsburgh and I snowmobile. But this year, I think I put 200 miles on my sled, and last year I put 1,500 on. Lakes didn't freeze till later.
Well, there's nothing this year either. Precipitation-wise,
nothing.
It was brutal.
So I think going to Florida kind of made me reflect on how year-round a life can be with the sun shining and warmer temperatures. And they have their whole water tank and their water system for their house outside, like under an eave. And I'm like, that doesn't – oh, that's right. It doesn't freeze. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is always odd to me.
We're not in New Hampshire where everything freezes. So it was kind of interesting to come back with a different perspective, different frame of mind on the fact that life can be more fulfilling if you take opportunity. Say, for instance, the 3 months that you have here that stink, go somewhere.
Yeah.
Use those opportunities to travel and take a vacation or whatever. But they're coming back May 16th, I think. They'll be back for the summer. So Stu works for me as an operator, equipment operator. And so he's coming back. And Stu McKenney is really awesome because he's an old timer. He's 72, 73 now, or maybe 75. I think Peggy's 72. And he's that old time. He's that old school guy that just kind of thinks of things simply and breaks things down into easy to understand ways of learning and understanding. And I really like being around him because his mentality and his references to things are very practical. And so it's kind of nice having that. I consider him a mentor. He's not necessarily my coach because I know pretty much what pieces are out there. Stu kind of helps me put them together in better order. Mm-hmm. But I do learn a lot
from him.
So that was my trip to Florida. It was pretty awesome.
That sounds nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so today we want to talk about, I know the time goes by fast, so instead of burning up all the time talking about, I don't know what we talked about, the eclipse last week. And the McKennies, who we have to stop talking about because
you could just go on and on about the mechanics.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty funny. No, I just like their perspective on things. Like, they have a neat perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things they did that impressed me was that they started thinking about retirement when they were 50 and 55 years old. And so they bought the house in Florida. And they, instead of getting to retirement and going, what are we going to do now? They were really great about planning so that when retirement happened, they had a house that was paid for.
Yeah.
And had vehicles and had things that were paid for instead of starting all over again. So I like their perspective on just looking at it as a thing that's going to happen to all of us. And they chose to plan early, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. Me thinking. I'm 55, so it kind of got me thinking about those things.
Got to get on
it. Okay. So the reason why I brought up Florida is because basically everything's licensed in Florida. Like, you can't even – I don't even think you can grocery shop without a license. Like, everything is licensed. Mm-hmm. And so – we have a very unique environment in New Hampshire where we seem to be the last to do anything, and helmet laws and Martin Luther King Day and, you know, observance of certain holidays. Like, we tend to be the last state in the nation to do just about anything.
Well, live free or die, right?
Yeah, live free or die, exactly.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do today was focused on the non-licensed trades. And the non-licensed trades are basically trades in which a young person or anybody, doesn't make any difference. You can be a lawyer, you can be a doctor, you can be anybody and just kind of want a life change and decide you want to do something different. So the non-licensed trades, and what I mean by that is, say, the non-licensed trades are roofing, painting, installation of drywall. You can put flooring down, you know, the tongue and groove flooring or linoleum flooring, or you can do the cork flooring. Like, there's trades out there that don't involve licensing. But, you know, there are certain things, like, for instance, if you wanted to be a roofing contractor and there are certificates showing competency from the roofing manufacturer, say, for instance, if you want to get certified from GAF Roofing or CertainTeed or whoever, like Englert, the metal company, like, you can achieve certain certifications that give you credibility.
Yeah.
We don't have licensing. We don't have general contractor licensing in New Hampshire. I'm not a fan of licensing because I feel like licensing is the kind of thing that as soon as you have a license, all of a sudden, like, you know what you're doing.
You're right.
You were able to pass a test.
Yeah. And I paid a fee.
Right. I passed the test, and all of a sudden, like, I got my shingle out, and people are going to think I know what I'm doing. And I think New Hampshire has a breed of people that still subscribe to the old school mentality of do your homework, check references, make sure that someone provides you a customer base that you can call. Like, you have to go about it old school. It's not to say that you can't be a creeper on Instagram or Facebook or, you know, like, find out who someone is or what their thoughts or hobbies or interests are. But basically, it really requires a customer, a person who wants to have work done, to go about vetting their contractors the old school way.
Yep.
And so it's very important that we as contractors, like, if someone says, you know, can you provide me some references? I'm happy to provide, you know, 30 references on all different types of jobs we've done, some simple jobs, some big jobs, like how, what's it like? It's not just about whether we do good work. It's what's communication like? What's it like having a relationship with George? What's it like having a relationship with George's guys?
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we do a little, we don't do it. We subscribe to the policy of having employees instead of subcontractors. So basically people that hire us to do work, they kind of, they see the same people all the time. They see, you know, we come as a team. And so each person, Kenny is my roofer, you know, Keith is my drywaller, Cody's my painter. Like, we have these things in-house. And so it's kind of nice because people become comfortable seeing the same people all the time, and they achieve a level of familiarity that makes them feel comfortable.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, it is important.
So non-licensed trades, let's just say you wanted to be a roofer, say you wanted to be a painter or a drywaller, or you wanted to install flooring, or you wanted to be a framer. Like, there are these facets of construction that really require an exposure to it. If you want to be a painter, you would go work for a painter. You know, even if you're considering a non-licensed trade as something that might be, it might be something that you're interested in, you still have to do your homework as far as who you would want to be tutored by.
Yeah.
So in other words, you have to, and there's a bunch of painting companies, like Joe Spaulding owns Brilliance Painting.
Mm-hmm.
Bradford Hancock owns Prana Design in Newberry. Like, there are Foster's Painting. Like, there are some painting companies out there that have a good reputation, and you can kind of learn from their people. And all you got to do is just keep your eyes and ears open. And it's amazing what you can learn on a daily basis.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. And so, I think that, I feel like that's really kind of the way that probably most people that, you know, ultimately get into the profession.
That's how I learned.
I mean, it's just, you just kind of do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, how many rooms have I painted over the years? I feel like I'd actually be a decent painter.
Yeah. Painting's difficult. Oh, painting drives me crazy. But
yeah.
Painting's very difficult, and it's very tedious. If there's a difference between, like, the homeowner painting a room and the professional painter concerned with dust and concerned with, you know, his tracks in and out of the house and putting drop cloths down, making sure the drop cloths are clean. The biggest problem with painting is preparation. I don't care whether you're painting a fender on a car or whether you're
That is fair, because, I mean, there's plenty of times where – I mean, I think there's probably in every room that I've painted, I don't think I've ever left one without at least some paint on the floor. So I don't really do like the whole drop cloth and stuff, which I should, because it's a pain.
So painting on a professional level is a little bit different.
It makes sense.
It's 3 weeks of prep and 3 minutes of painting. It's
pretty much
very aggravating.
Yeah.
I don't have the patience for it, but
Cody,
our painter, is fantastic. Like, we have an in-house painter that he just is very conscientious, and he's very detail oriented. And every job we do, I try to say, hey, Cody, you know, he did a nice job and the customers love him. And Cody does some things that are kind of old school, even though he's a young kid, 30 years old. He's a youngster, but he's learned and been taught by people how to paint. Like, for instance, one of the things he does that I really love is that if he's painting the outside of a house, he will paint the side of the window trim the actual window trim color, whereas people cheat on the sides of the windows because they paint it the body color of the siding because it's easy. Because if you paint the side of the trim color, you have to cut in. Let's just say it's clapboard siding. You have to cut in each clapboard, and it's very tedious.
Yeah.
So, you know, Cody has a really neat value system in his painting, and he's clean, and he's, you know, he works in a way that really provides an outstanding finished product, but it's subtle. You know, some of the things, like, I walk up to a house and I can tell, hey, Cody did a nice job doing this, but there are ways to go faster and make more money.
Well, I think it's like you said. I mean, it's subtle, but it's the things you notice.
Yeah,
you know? I do. I mean, like you just said, like with the clapboard, because I was thinking of, you know, repainting an aluminum sided shed that I have this spring. And, you know, I was thinking about the side clapboards and how much of a pain it would be to go individually and do each one of those and tape it off and yada, yada, yada. And
it's got to be something that's in your heart. Like, you want to do that.
You have to have a passion for it, I think.
Right. It's all about blending. If you want that window to stand out, you're going to paint the window or the trim in such a way that the window looks kind of like a feature.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want that window to blend in to the side and you're like, oh, screw it, it's just a window, then you would paint the siding color. You would paint the side of the window trim the siding color, yep. and then it kind of like it's just there. You know, it's just there, exactly.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, not a lot of detail spent on it. But Cody's very conscientious and does a great job. You know, there's an old-time craft of drywall. You know, we talk about sheetrocking and, you know, the use of gypsum and how gypsum's basically mined from the earth and where
what is sheetrock? Like, what is that actually? What is that?
It's a ground stone. It's gypsum. It's a ground stone they mine from the earth.
I always thought it was some kind of just compound that they pasted together kind of thing.
I don't know what the process is of making it, but somehow they are able to glue it and fabricate it and make sheet stock. And, you know, the research I've done on drywall is that it used to be that wall coverings were made out of this board called homasote board. They used to take this, it's like a fine ground chipboard. It's very lightweight. They used to put it on the walls. It came in sheet stock, 4x8 sheets. And then you could cover it with wallpaper. You could use burlap wallpaper. You could parge coat it with horsehair plaster. The transition of wall coverings was lath, which is accordion lath, which was thin, wide pieces of different wood, hemlock. I don't know what they used for wood, but it was able to be split with a special axe.
Yep.
And what they did was they stretched it. And so when they stretched it, they created gaps in between the splits. Mm-hmm. And then when they put the parge coat, when they put the plaster over it, the splits in between the pieces, because they stretch it, it was actually called accordion lath. And they nailed this to the wall, and then the plaster actually would go in the little cracks of the splits, and that's what holds it in place.
Interesting.
Horsehair plaster.
Wow.
So then it went from that as a wall covering to homasote board. So according to what I've learned, gypsum drywall, the drywall we have today, was actually implemented by the military to build barracks that were fire retardant, fairly fire retardant. They had to have something that they could build quick, set up places, but had some fire retardancy to it.
Yep.
And so drywall was, I don't know if it was invented, somebody invented it, and they designed these sheets. They fabricated these sheets to take the place of the homasote board, and it provided a fire resistance, which was, you know, helped particularly in structures where residences or barracks are linked together. It would help prevent the spread of fire from one barrack to the other.
Interesting.
So it's kind of a neat, you know, progression of events. And so when you take this product of drywall today, the craft of drywall, of plastering, let's just say one thing has remained consistent in all of the different wall coverings that have happened since the beginning of time, 1600s, like they used to double brick, you know, and then you parge the inside of the brick, but you have the transfer of heat and cold that way. There was always, I guess what I'm saying is there was always a craft of plastering in some way, shape, or form some surface, whether it was brick, block, accordion lath, homasote board, or drywall, the craft of finishing with plaster, it has been around since the beginning of time.
That's crazy.
It is. And so, you know, if you think about the mortar capability or the mortar capacity, it's basically a product that hardens up, but it has to be troweled on. So you have these, I mean, anybody can go to YouTube and Google plaster finishing. And so today, the art, I call it an art because it is the art of finishing drywall, is a tradition that's gone on for thousands and thousands of years. And so that's a craft that someone, let's just say if someone wanted to learn, you know, any homeowner can go to Lavalley's or Bellatates and buy some sheets of drywall and think they're like how hard can it be? It is very difficult.
Yeah, I don't even attempt it because it's just one of those things I'm not going to do well.
It's so difficult.
Yeah. But
finishing drywall properly requires, if someone wants to learn that trade, they have to go work for a drywall installation company, work for a general contractor that even in general contracting, let's just say you do a bathroom renovation, just something small, you know, 10 sheets. There's different kinds of drywall that you use in different situations. There's a green board called MR, moisture resistant drywall, is different than your regular drywall. And you use those in moisture prone areas like bathrooms and basements and
kitchens.
You know, well, not no kitchens. The kitchens tend to be a little more wide open spaces, but anywhere where you're going to have humid, susceptible conditions in which mold can grow. And so this moisture resistant board has properties that prevent mold from growing, and so we use it in bathrooms and any moisture-prone area. That would be the thing you use MR board. So the other thing about MR board too is that if you're going to plaster a house, like they have, I don't know if there's any companies around here, but I haven't done it in a long time, but there are companies where you drywall the house, you put the plasterboard on, and then there's companies that come in and do a skim coat of plaster. Hmm. So instead of doing tape coats, you put your base coat on, you do your tape, and then you do two layers of drywall compound or different, they have different products that dry faster. Durabond is one of them that we use on corners to, you know, it's a product that you have to mix with a paddle and a drill, and it dries harder to prevent corners from like chipping and blowing out and that kind of thing. So you use different products in different areas when you're finishing drywall. But the drywall craft itself, I'm not an advocate of the drywall trade. I'm not promoting people to go into the drywall trade per se, because it is very hard on your body. The drywall sheets are very heavy.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of overhead work. It's just,
isn't that one of those jobs you were saying, like, you should ideally be about 5'10"?
Yeah. Being a little taller is. Yeah. So even if you break down the drywall trade itself, you have the hanging of the drywall, which people typically get paid for by the sheet. And then you have the taping of the drywall. So sometimes the tapers will do the priming, and then the painter comes in afterward.
Yep.
So there's different companies that are structured different ways that perform the services in different capacities. But if you want it to be a drywall finisher, the craft of drywall is a system. Like, you do certain things first, and it's a system. You use the tape. Everybody's seen the drywall tape that you can buy at Aubuchon's or wherever. You should tape in a certain way.
Yeah.
And so if you were interested in this craft, you would want to become very good at it so that you are, in my opinion, there's a guy local, his name is Eric Nadeau, All Stars in Drywall. I think he's from Newbury. He took it to a different level.
Yeah.
Like, he could fix stuff. He could feather stuff. He had a real good eye, I think he still does it, has a real good eye for doing the best drywall. I mean, he just takes it to a different level.
The problem that I've noticed with my drywall, especially drywall that I've had done in the past few years, is the taping kind of taping. Like, over the few years, like, it starts like kind of pulling out from the paint.
Yeah.
You know, and like it becomes like noticeable. Yeah. So
a lot of times what happens in that situation is that we call them nail pops, where you drywall something new, and we have issues in bathrooms because there's a lot of moisture in the bathrooms, and the wood, we've seen 100-year-old wood still move around because it's susceptible. The cells of the wood are still susceptible to the intake of moisture. And so the wood changes widths and thicknesses very slightly. And so drywall is one of those zero tolerance jobs. So, you know, there's two different trains of thought. You could be a drywall hanger, learn how to hang properly. And there is a system for avoiding butt joints. You want to be able to size your room in such a way that you avoid the butt joints, where the two pieces fit together end to end. You want to minimize butt joints because those are the hardest things. So drywall is tapered on the edges, on the seam, so that it comes together and makes the taping easy, because there's actually a little recess and indent in the drywall when it comes together that the tape goes in, which makes it really nice and handy. Mm. But the butt joints don't have it.
Yeah.
I don't know why exactly, but it's really hard to tape the butt joints, so you try to minimize butt joints. But that this is one of those, I'm just using this as an example of one of those things where you could be a hanger, get paid by the sheet. You could be a taper, get paid by the square foot. You could be a painter, get paid by the square foot. There's a lot of different ways to go about it. I'm just using it as an example of a non-licensed trade, which requires you to go work for a general contractor. You know, if you went to go work for a small remodeler that had to do this in-house, you have to do it in-house, because you can't like renovate a 60-square-foot bathroom and do six of them. And then you're like, the jobs are so small that you're not going to have a drywaller follow behind you. So a lot of times drywalling is one of those things where a general contractor will learn how to do it. Or like me, we have somebody on staff that's very good at taping. Keith White is very good. And so we have this because we need mobility.
Yep.
So we can say, hey, Keith, you're going to Churchill's house tomorrow to do some drywall patches, or we're getting ready to do this house, there's this. And we have the mobility of being able to send the same person to do multiple projects, even sometimes the same day. So, and then sometimes a customer will call and say, hey, you know, this seam cracked, or, you know, on a new project, the wood's moving around, and you're always going to have some patching that goes back because the wood is moving.
Yeah.
So I'm just using this as an example to say, you know, if you wanted to be a drywaller, if you wanted to lay hardwood flooring, for instance, there is a lot of money in laying flooring.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard on your back. You get paid by the square foot sometimes. If you get into a relationship with a general contractor and you want to do flooring and then you stay exclusive to that general contractor and that general contractor is hiring you job after job after job, I can guarantee you that that general contractor just wants a nice job. He doesn't necessarily, like I don't put things out for bid. Mm-hmm. I just have a certain Matt Gallion from Grantham, you know, he does my flooring.
Yep.
Bernie from LaValle's, we have our flooring subbed out to these guys that do it every day and they do a really good job, but nobody's licensed. Like, it's not the kind of thing. So mm-hmm. if you wanted to lay hardwood flooring or you wanted to do tile work, it's another excellent, excellent opportunity for people to do tile work.
Yeah.
Problem with tile work is if you go to Home Depot and they have these DIY, they have these days where they have like some tile guy comes in and, you know, they have this little workshop they do. And
right.
like, it is not that easy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because I want to retile my kitchen and bathroom.
It is not that easy.
And I know that I can't do it myself.
It's not easy.
At least right now, because I have no experience and
right.
I don't really want to test it out on
right.
the house that I
own. Right. Biggest thing about tile is just understanding your structure.
Yeah.
If you have an old structure with creaky floors, tile is a zero movement installation. Zero mm-hmm. movement, meaning if it moves, grout's going to crack, tiles are going to come up, tiles are going to break. Like yeah. you have, first of all, you have to be an assessor of whether or not tile is even feasible where you are. So,
yeah.
so as a suggestion would be, is it's kind of funny because the tile work has been something that I've kind of forgotten about. Tile work is super fussy. So what you could do is you could work for a tile installation. You could work for New London Floorcraft. You could work for LaBernie at LaValle's. You could make some calls and say, who needs an apprentice? And what I mean by an apprentice is someone that runs the tile saw, mm-hmm. someone who mixes the mortar, the thin set, someone who mixes the grout, trying to figure out what the right consistency is, trying to figure out what the right sponge is, what the right squeegee is, like what you do in certain applications based on joint size. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of little nuances to it that really require you working for someone. Like, I'm a very visual learner. I have to see something done. Yeah. I have to watch somebody do it
so
that I can
way.
Understand the mechanics of mm-hmm. it. I have to understand mm-hmm. what the mechanics are of a dull tile saw blade. I have to understand what sound it makes. I have to visualize the rate of cutting.
Mm-hmm.
Like a brand new blade cuts like this, but this old piece of junk blade cuts like this.
Yeah.
The chipping of old blades, like I have to see it.
Yeah.
And so there are these crafts in which it requires you to go work specifically. So let's outline them. Putting in flooring. I mean specifically, like hardwood flooring.
Mm-hmm.
Tile is a different lane. Like if you're thinking about lanes on a street, flooring, hardwood, cork, there are some similarities in that type of surface.
Mm-hmm.
If a hardwood flooring guy wants to lay tile, not saying you can't do it,
mm-hmm.
I'm saying it's kind of a different wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Different tooling, it's a different mindset.
Yep.
Roofing contractors, for instance, there is a ton of money to be made in roofing. Single sole proprietor, you can hire a company to strip it, make it watertight, and then you go in and put the shingles down. The best way to do it is, you know, you go work for Mike Mayo. You go work for WeatherCheck Roofing mm-hmm. in George's Mills. Excellent reputation, certified in synthetic slate, certified in copper, certified in metal, certified in shingles. Like the Mayo Roofing Company in George's Mills mm-hmm. does an excellent job. And that's why McGray and Nichols and Brian Carey, that's why very high-end people. We happen to have an in-house roofer. So we do all our own roofing. But Mike Mayo from WeatherCheck Roofing does an excellent job. So go work for a guy like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to do insulation, for instance, insulation is a non-licensed trade. Go work for Deco Insulation. Go pick a reputable service provider. I don't care what anybody's doing out there. I just want to recommend reputable service providers. And mm-hmm. so if you want to make a change in your life and you want to do something different, you think of it like if you're going to hire a general contractor to do the job, who are you going to call to do your fact checking? You can get on Angie's List and you can go like, oh, this person's being recommended like a restaurant. I don't know if those recommendations are accurate.
Right.
I don't know. There is something wholesome and righteous about picking up the phone and saying, hey, Mrs. Smith, did George Newhart or did Brian Carey or did Bill Ostrom or did McGran Nichols do a good job for you? Tell me what it was like. It's not just the production of the product. Yeah. I always say it's not the production. It's not necessarily the production of the product, which is important. It's also the process in the production of the product, which is communication.
Mm-hmm.
How do situations get handled when there's disagreements, when there's misunderstandings? When there is, you know, we rely on text messages and email so much that we have gotten away from
what we have lost sight of just human interaction.
Context.
Yeah.
You have to have context.
Yeah.
What is the inflection in my voice?
Mm-hmm.
What is the tone of my voice?
Yeah.
Am I sharp? Am I standing my ground?
Right.
Am I digging my heels in? There is still a human interaction that requires vetting. A contractor, because you think about it, if you're going to hire a contractor to build a house and you're going to be with him for 9 months, you better make sure you can get along.
Right. That's people.
It's people. Yeah. We are people.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying in conclusion is if you are going to think about a change in vocation, if you're thinking about doing something different, the best thing you can do is just expose yourself to multiple things. If you go work for a general contractor, that general contractor is going to expose you to every element of the construction trade. And you can say to yourself, oh, I like this. I like this. I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like heights. Guess what? I'm probably not going to be a roofer.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, maybe I'm not that meticulous. Maybe I'm not going to be a tile setter.
Mm-hmm.
Tile setting requires a meticulous attention to detail. You have one shot to get the plane right, to get the grout right. You have one shot.
Yep.
And that's why the best tile guys are like finished carpenters.
Mm-hmm.
They understand the detail of fit and finish. They understand there's one chance to do something.
Right.
There's one opportunity to do something. It requires a brain that will not settle for excuses. And the difference between a good tile setter, a good finished carpenter, a good roofer, a good anything is the character of the human.
Right.
Wanting to do a good job.
Yeah.
Not making excuses. And once you establish this pattern with people, your customers, your clients, and they know that the human element introduced into any equation is not going to be perfect, but you're willing to step up to the plate and admit your mistakes. Once once they understand that character thread about you,
it just shows you're genuine.
But it's not like I'm going to lay down like a doormat and let people walk all over me.
Right.
But if I was, if I'm responsible for something, I'm going to acknowledge it.
Right.
I'm not going to get into a big pissing match with people about what percentage of fault can be laid on my shoulders.
Right, like how much should I financially allocate towards the replacement or repair of whatever that we damaged or...
Just fix it.
Right.
It's very simple.
Yeah.
So in this thread of trying to communicate the channel of how people can get into the trades in a non-licensed way, you don't have to take tests, you don't have to pay for schooling, you don't have to do Zoom and be on call and drive down to Raymond. There's probably more than that. I would say there's probably 10 direct trades that are readily accessible by working for a general contractor that are viable, can produce a good income, creative.
And if you're really good at it, I mean, you can always, you know, once you've got that level of experience, you can branch off and do your own thing.
You're crafty, exactly.
Yeah.
Learn the craft. And then, like, I have a guy working for me, Chris Ketchum. He's going to probably have his own business someday.
Yeah.
And if you have any awareness about yourself, about your skill, about what you like, what you don't like, what you're good at, if you've identified any character trait about yourself that you think is worthy of exploration, there are several 10 direct crafts that do not require any schooling, certification. They don't require any. There's no loans. There's no tuition. There's no long-term debt. You just need to go do it.
You just start.
You just start. You just start in.
Yeah.
One of the issues with non-licensed trades, too, is that maybe you don't get the credibility. Like, my heart is into framing. Like, I love to frame. I also love to run an excavator. I like site development. Like, I like envisioning a piece of land and bringing it forward to viability. Like, you look at a piece of land and you're like, there's no life there, you know? And all of a sudden, there's a house with lights on and kids running around and, you know, there's schoolwork being done and there's people coming home from work and there's, you know, people working out of the house. It has life. And so I like considering the possibilities of taking something dead. It's got trees growing on it, of course, but taking something and bringing it to life.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that's kind of where we're at today.
Yeah.
It's just you have to make it your own. You have to you have to have a perception of yourself that is expansive, open to opportunities. You have to have some gumption.
Yeah. You just have to have the will to want to do it.
Will to explore.
Yeah.
And the will to be wrong, you know, and just start off on a journey and figure out where you end up. Yeah. Pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's this edition of the program with George Newark. George Newark Construction, Trusted Rentals Automotive. Don't forget, you can listen to previous episodes online at WNTK.com. If you just go to the podcast page and search for George Newark, most of those will pop up. And we will talk to you again next Friday with another edition on News Talk 99.7 WNTK, AM 1490, FM 98.9 WUVR.